following is a message from Jones Family Farms. Looking for that perfect Christmas tree this season? What about the perfect wine to go with your holiday dinner? Look no further than Jones Family Farm, a 400-acre working farm in Connecticut. Jones Family Farms is as passionate about education as it is about farming. Whether you're picking fresh strawberries or exploring local wines, we hope you're inspired to learn more about Connecticut farming. For more information, visit www.jonesfamilyfarms.com.
Thank you to our sponsor. This is Severance. I'm here with Tim. We are talking about young farmer issues. This is another episode of Young Farmer Radio, Greenhorn Radio. Tim, how's it going over there?
It's going very well, thank you.
Tell us where you are right now.
Currently, I'm in Cazenovia, New York, which is sort of central New York near Syracuse, and I'm at Grey Rock Farm, which is a 270-acre, full-year, full-food-style farm that I'm going to be starting at full-time in January. I'm just doing some part-time stuff while I move stuff back and forth from the farm I used to be at.
So, now, I've already had, this is now the second Cazenovia interview, because I interviewed Matt already.
Oh, you got Matt?
He's already in the archive. He didn't tell you that?
Well, I knew that he was had a blog posting or something on there.
Well, anyway, the point of the story is that Matt and Tim are both Essex Farm alumna, and as such are very interesting specimens to study. I'm sorry, I'll stop teasing now. Tim, do you want to tell everybody about your kind of professional trajectory into agriculture and how it landed you out there in the remote reaches of Western New York?
Sure, yeah. I for a while, post-college, had worked a number of different jobs in New York and Louisiana and Hawaii, and there were jobs that were kind of focused on a lot were outdoor work, like trail work or habitat management or outdoor education. And some education programs in schools as well. And I was interested in trying to combine some of those things, but also produce something really directly, which at that time, doing something that felt very tangible was important to me. And I started exploring the idea of farming, which I got actually into in 2006 at a vegetable CSA in the Hudson Valley, Philly's Bridge Farm, which is a fairly small vegetable CSA. We did have some chickens and sheep, but mostly it was all veggie. I was there for about a season, and then I ended up actually going to Missouri for a couple years. Was just farming part-time while I was doing a master's program in rural sociology with a focus on agriculture and natural resources. I knew I wanted to keep my hands in farming, so during summers and for my thesis research, I was at a farm. And then I just liked farming better in the end, and so I got myself to Essex Farm, which is a fairly intensive arrangement at that time of full-year work with the livestock, the dairy, the draft horses, the vegetables and grains and hay and all of that, and I figured that was the best way to really dive in and see, okay, you know, I thought I liked farming and I wanted to test myself and see if I really did, and I did. So now I'm moving over to this farm to manage for the year for 2012 and see what happens from there.
So you're another one of these highly overeducated young farmers, of which
yes,
we have so many of in our movement. But tell us what you brought from your sociology, your study of sociology, and what that's brought you in terms of, you know, moving to a new place. Like, what are you bringing to that new place?
What did it bring me? like I said, I mean, there was a big focus on agriculture and natural resources, so through some of the papers I got to be involved in or different professors I met and the work that they did with farmers in Missouri, I think I got sensitized to, I'd say, an academic perspective on what sustainable agriculture is, which is always interesting to go from, you know, a sort of a reading-based perspective on something or even an interview-based one to doing it yourself. I don't know what I can say about specifically what I bring into it. I guess one thing is that there was a big focus in my department also on new development and having to focus on how you relate as a farm and a farmer to your community, whether that's other farmers in the area, and if you're networking with them for hay or meat or some sort of either bartering or directly selling their product at your site, or to larger community things if you're involved in education programs with some schools nearby, or, you know, you're on the volunteer fire department or whatever, just figuring out how you exist, both knowing that you have to have a business that you need to run and that takes a lot of your time and energy, but knowing that you want to be a part of a larger community.
So in essence, and this is particularly relevant, I just come from New York City. We had a big march to occupy Zuccotti Park with a bunch of farmers.
Right.
You know, no man is an island, and no farm is an island, even though sometimes it seems like the farm is a self-contained unit. In fact, it is not.
Yes.
And that would be the silly kind of thinking.
Yeah, it's definitely being able to think systematically and put yourself in, both as an individual, which is very important, but also as part of the larger ecology of the land and the community and all that kind of stuff is really important. And we have a joke sort of at Ethics Farm. We started talking about doable agriculture instead of sustainable agriculture, which was, you know, there's a lot of merit to some of the tenets of sustainability, and they're really fun to think about and to work towards, but sometimes you also have to just do what you can do.
Do what you can do and understand that doing what you can do is made more possible by working together. I feel like the example of Essex, the number of different farms that work together and the farms that have kind of popped up around are a really good expression of the kind of new community dynamic in our generation.
Yeah.
Do you have the same kind of young farmer community up where you are now?
In Casanova, I think there is quite a good community. As far as young farmer community, I'm not sure. Like I said, I've just started out here doing some part-time work this fall, and I'll be here more full-time starting in the first week of January. But there's definitely a good farming community. I've traveled around here with Matt, who's the farmer at Grey Rock, and you know, he's buying some beef from somebody nearby when he needs to get more animals in his herd, or we get cheeses from somewhere else, or we're selling some mushrooms that someone else is doing, or we're getting honey from somewhere else in addition to having some of our own bees. So there's definitely a really good farming community. I don't know much as far as the demographics, though, you know, the age of all the different farmers that are involved in that.
And where are your horses?
My horses are in two different places. My horses are very cosmopolitan at this point there. One is still at Essex Farm, and I'll be moving him out here. That's Bear. I'll be moving Bear out here in a week or two to Casanova. JD is in Maryland with a family, an incredibly generous family, who is trying to take care of him and get him back to working order. He was injured in the fall of 2010, so a little over a year ago, and has been on the mend, but is not workable yet. He's been lame. He had some nerve damage from a barbed wire incident, but it's uncertain whether or not he'll come back to working condition. So fingers crossed that this family is doing their best to get him back in working order.
Wow, that's so nice of them. How did that happen?
Yeah.
Like the connection, not the injury.
How do I know that family?
Yeah.
They are involved with Essex Farm. They're two of the daughters who are amazing, awesome workers, come and volunteer. Rather, they were volunteering for a while. They've worked for the past couple of summers at Essex Farm, and so has the father, who is a very skilled craftsman. He's really good with working on machines and doing electrical work. And so they do some work at the farm. They're also members of the farm, and they've been a really big part of their horse people. They love horses. They have riding horses and some work horses, and they just really, really like horses in general. And they knew I was in a bit of a spot, and they just incredibly graciously offered to try and help.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
So what's
really
the plan with Bear? Are you going to bring him in to work in bigger team in solo, or is he going to be a three-horse team?
We'll see. He'll do all of the above. So Matt currently has two Percherons, and I'll bring Bear, who's also a Percheron, and which doesn't matter necessarily if they're working together, but they just all happen to be. He'll get probably paired up in just a team of two sometimes with Matt's horses, and then sometimes we'll probably hitch up some three, and we'll see. You know, fingers crossed, I think JD hopefully will be back, and so then we can do multiple sets of twos and also maybe some fours for some bigger hitches.
Bigger hitches.
Yeah.
Do you want to reflect briefly on how horses are playing into your love of farming, or you move from Essex now to another horsepower farm, and where you're going with horse? Like, what's your dream? Where are you going with horses?
Yeah. Well, it was one of the big reasons that I went to Essex Farm 3 years ago was that I thought I I wanted to experience the diversity of farm work outside of what I was doing, which was primarily vegetables. And I also wanted to work with the horses. I thought that I just thought from having visited Essex Farm back in 2006 that I would like that, and I wasn't sure, though. I'd never done it. And I did. I did. I like the energy of being around the horses. I like the way they smell. I like the way they sound. I like the pace of a day, that the kind of maintenance stuff you do with them on a regular basis, from grooming and picking their feet to their feeding schedules. And so they're a really integral part in the way I think about farming, because if I want to even do a small acreage of vegetables, I still need pasture, and if I can, to make some hay as well instead of buying it in. So they affect the way I think about what kind of land base I'm looking for as far as my daily thoughts about farming. I mean, they're very integral to it. They're a significant part of my enjoyment of farming is working with those horses.
Now, Tim, what do you say when people ask you if that's old-fashioned?
It all depends on where they're coming from, I guess. It depends on who I'm talking to, if they're a farmer also, or if they are, you know, a friend, or if they're somebody's parents or grandparents, and then I give different answers. But I guess
friend?
In part they are, but in part I think that's not, I don't take that as necessarily a positive or a negative comment. I think I read somewhere that the UN was describing organic farming or moving into the future with organic farming as sort of neo-traditional, which I kind of like that term. And the idea is, well, you're borrowing some concepts that work, that are good ideas that we've known about for hundreds, really thousands of years, depending on what it is, from, you know, good fertility management being important to the soil, whether or not we actually follow through on that. But, I mean, these are old ideas. So having animals where you can grow your own fuel, and where if you enjoy working with them and they provide fertility and other things like that, well, it makes sense. But finding that out also make that fit within the whatever your current situation is, whether it's the marketing that you need to do or whatever else the cost of your different products are, your inputs. So I think that there's a really good place for some old ideas and also to be able to revamp them and make them fit within the modern context.
Well, the point that the oxen driving dudes always are making is how much more affordable a team of oxen is than and just like a small set of implements is compared to a tractor, especially when they break down.
True. I mean, you can get by with a lot less. There's a mix of, I don't know, you know, it all depends on what areas you're in, because finding the horses, a good horse team that you want, can be a bit tricky. Or, you know, if you don't have the land base and you have to buy in a lot of hay on a regular basis, and, if you're feeding them but not working them very regularly, then you're putting money into it on a regular basis but not getting work out of the horses if you don't have enough work for them to do, whereas a tractor can be idle. I think there's pluses and minuses on both sides. And I would say as fuel costs increase and as some other things maybe happen, well, yeah, maybe there's some increased argument in favor of horses in terms of their efficiency and the ability to produce their fuel. It's still, I think, really important that you like working with them to some extent. I think you can still be a good Teamster and farmer if you don't, but I think in general your life experience and their life experience is going to be better if you like them. And that to me, I guess, is that's the principal reason I work with them, is because I like them.
Yeah, it's nice. It's being around other people who also like horses is also an incentive.
That's true.
In one place.
It's nice to have that community.
Yeah. So when you were learning about horses, you obviously had Mark and Kristen. What are some other places that aspiring horse farmers might want to look to for inspiration and training?
You said what are some other places?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. There's So in addition to Essex Farm and Grey Rock Farms, which where I've been involved at, there's a farmer named David Fisher, and he is in Conway, Massachusetts at Natural Roots Farm. I think he is a fantastic, fantastic farmer and teamster and an amazing teacher. So I very highly recommend anyone to look into his farm if they're interested. There's the Northeast Draft Animal Power Field Days, which is an annual event. And if people were interested, they could look up something on, I think it's the Draft Animal Power Network, DAPNET, DAPNET. That's a site where they can get in touch with a whole slew of people who work oxen and horses and mules and such. And that's a great place to go, really, to start, because from there you can network to all the other kind of people. The Nordells in Pennsylvania, or Don Hughes in Marathon, New York, or all these different people. And in Canada, there's some great teamsters and horse farmers up there. So I'd say try and find some central network and or get in touch with one of those people, myself or someone else, and start branching out from there just to get more context.
So you're saying that it's community building, that learning how to, especially do horse farming, is also about being open to new relationships and assuming the right posture for learning, which is, especially with horses, one of tremendous humility.
Absolutely. Just as a side note, working with horses is an incredible self-learning process. I think it's a very introspective thing to be involved in because you constantly are trying to figure out how to communicate to an animal to get it to do what you want it to do, and figuring out what's working, what's not working, and why, and being aware of your environment, what they're doing and what you're doing. And it's an amazing self-learning process. But as far as that community aspect, I mean, I think that's farming in general. If you start farming, you're going to run up against the walls of what you don't know how to do, you'll bump into problems you don't know how to fix, and situations that you're ready for, maybe or maybe not. But knowing a network of people who, when you get into those situations, you don't feel as overwhelmed. You know who to call or who to send an email to, or drive over to your farmer neighbor and say, "What do you do when this happens to your cow's hoof? Or what do you do when this happens to your harness piece? Or what do you, you know, or your tractor, or whatever it is?" Just to have that network and that community is, I think, essential to being a good farmer, whether you're working
horses or not.
Well, it's
so funny because I was listening to this program on the radio about all these towns in Texas, and you know, it was like Paris, Texas, and Bug Tussle, Texas, and one of them was like Truth and Consequences.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, I ran into something the other day, and it was a problem, and it was a problem completely of my own creation. And unlike in the wider world where I can, like, look at global capitalism or, you know, greed of others or, you know, bad systems.
This one's on you.
It was totally on me. I had created my own problem.
Yeah.
And, man, you can't blame anyone except yourself, and it's so healthy to blame yourself for something sometimes. Hold yourself accountable.
Yeah, I think if you do it to the right amount, you give yourself a sense of accountability and from there responsibility to fix it. And that's so long as it's not overwhelming or constantly overwhelming, then it's a growing thing.
Yeah, man, it's a bad feeling, but it's also a good feeling.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, depending on your sensitivity to it or whatever, you know, you work with horses, you're working with a live animal, and so when you make mistakes, you make mistakes on a living and feeling creature, which both makes you, ideally, you try to make less and less mistakes as you go, so you're not causing confusion or pain or whatever else it might be, or hurting them in a bigger way. But also, I think you're driven to try and do that because they are living creatures, and you do develop a relationship with them, then you care about them, and so it's very motivating to try to not make mistakes, but that, of course, is somewhat unavoidable to make some mistakes.
When the consequences are going to live as long as the horse. Okay, so last big question here. It's a
okay.
Big one. Are you ready?
I guess so. We'll see.
If you are creating, now you're in the second round of a full year, full diet CSA.
Yeah.
In what way do you feel like that particular business and farm plan is reflective of your either critique of the current food system or desire for the future food system? And what role does that shape a farm play for you philosophically?
Okay. How does it fit into my overall view on a food system, sort of? Is that the question?
Or why did you choose it? What's in it for you?
Well, I chose it because I think the bottom line reason for why I'm really wanting to make a lifestyle and a career and et cetera out of farming is that I like it. And what I like best about farming is having a diversity of work in my days. I like being around plants and the animals. I mean, I think aesthetically, seeing a field with some cows in it or horses in it, I just appreciate that and I enjoy it. I like the way they are, to be around their sounds and smells. But I also like being in the dirt and working with the vegetables and if possible, some grains and hay. I mean, they're all just, it's different kinds of work to do in a day, and they all fulfill some different needs and sort of also just aesthetic enjoyments. But then there's the ecological reasons, having that fertility on the farm. from, you know, moving their manure around if you're pasturing chickens or moving your animals around regularly, or also the concentrated bedding packs from your dairy or your beef in the winter or your horses, etc. You know, having that on your farm, I think you've got your fertility, you've got your aesthetics, you've got your different labor that you get to do, so your personal enjoyment, and then you also have a pretty cool and unique marketing tool for right now, because there aren't a lot of that. Those types of farms happening right now. So you've also positioned yourself potentially to be financially successful. As far as the bigger, that's why I do it. As far as like the bigger reasons and how it fits in, you know, I don't know. I think this makes sense. I think it's a great model, and I think it's a cool idea also on at least a sort of a micro farm. I don't know how it scales down or up. The two farms I've been at around 270 to 500 acres. It'll be interesting to see if people try and do it on even bigger acreage and even smaller. But I don't think you have to have it all on the same site. I think the point is more to have some of these things together. You could have a livestock farm near a vegetable farm and still have some of the, you know, the ecological and fertility, etc. benefits there. It's just, I think it's relevant to the bigger food system whether or not this model needs to be perpetuated en masse.
Well, it's really exciting to me just to see new models and models that are so attractive and very capable people working to perfect new models and continue expanding the range of repertoire of possibility for local food.
Yeah.
I feel like the next phase is going to be like really radical cooperation, like inter-valley or inter-regional cooperatives.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's going to be really important.
Well, cool. So tell me, where are you going on Wednesday? What should we tell our listeners to go to?
Geez, I am going to a premiere of the documentary Small Farm Rising. Ben Stechschulte made this particular movie as a follow up to his earlier one called I Think Three Farms, but it's in New York City, and it is a I want to say it's in Tribeca.
Tribeca Cinema, 75 Varick Street, New York City.
Okay, there it is. It's at 7 p.m. this Wednesday, and it's called Small Farm Rising. And if you're in the city or interested in coming in, everybody should make their way there. It's a fantastic film. He's got amazing footage. It's just very beautiful to watch. It really shows the beautiful physical aspects of farming. And you also get to hear about some of these three farms that are located up in the Adirondacks, which are each interesting in their own way. It's a fun film, and it's just fun to watch. It's good too. And also, I got to say, I like Ben. Ben Stechschulte is a great guy, and I think the film's great. So I really recommend it.
So that's Small Farm Rising. Small Farms Rising. You can check out their website. They had a cool Kickstarter up that you can watch, and I think that they're selling the DVDs already. So
yep.
If you don't make it over there, if you happen to be organizing a farm film festival or we're a big fan of Greenhorns or in any other way are interested to pursue particularly the kind of visual and aesthetic frontiers of sustainable food, I give it three thumbs up.
Excellent.
Awesome, Tim. Well, I appreciate so much all you do, and I hope I get to see you soon, and keep strong up there.
Hey, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to do the interview, and I hope to see you soon as well.
All right, everybody. Join us again next week for another episode of Greenhorns Radio. And check out the blog. There's a lot of action going on right now, a lot of jobs, a lot of farm jobs. They all need to get filled. Okay, bye-bye.